Sports at 5-9 The Fan. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning.
Honor, pride, courage.
Leafs lose 4-1 to the Tampa Bay Lightning. By my accounting, the last most influential standings game for the Maple Leafs. Not to say the teams they're playing aren't counting on a victory or are desperate for a victory, I should say. Save for Montreal on Saturday. Mm-hmm. I mean, they always want to beat the Leafs, but Penguins on Monday? Oh, that's a team that's still alive? You got a couple of Devils games in there? Talk about the Devils-Rangers game from yesterday, too, at some point today.
Thank you.
But yeah, it was pretty good effort, at least through 40 minutes against the Panthers, and a good start for the Leafs, despite being down 1-0. Goaltending let them down, and ultimately a 4-1 loss at home to the Lightning. Let's talk to Nick Kiprios, a real Kipper and born. How's it going, Kipper?
Good morning, guys. Very well. How are you?
I'm doing all right. So what do you make of the import of these final regular season games? And they still have another one to come against the Lightning. That's the last game of the season. Second last game of the season is against the Panthers, but that's the Panthers' last game of the season. Like, what do you make of, like, how important or how much Sheldon Keefe is prioritizing picking up the 2 points in these games?
Well, listen, it's not a be-all, end-all, the points. For me, it's now the optics of what you see on a consistent basis here and where you got to clean up your game. And we know there's a few boxes that they need to check between now and game one. And some are looking better than others. And then there's a couple of boxes that might be a concern for him. And that's what you need these last, half a dozen games to go. Just start cleaning up your game and you get ready and you roll the dice. That's what every team does once you've entered the dance.
Yeah, how much does the schedule kind of help them out in that regard? I mean, we know the two games they had this week, but Ben mentioned it there. The schedule for them coming up, the games don't matter in terms of wins or losses to the Leafs. Again, I'm with you. You definitely have some things, you know, from a process perspective you want to see, but it's the Penguins on Monday, the Devils, they're scratching for wins. You got two against them. The Red Wings need their points, and then you got the back-to-back games in Florida. How much does the schedule, the fact that those teams will be very much playing kind of life-or-death hockey, how much does that help the Leafs in terms of getting themselves in a position or Sheldon Keefe kind of, you know, checking those last boxes or answering some questions he maybe still has about his game one lineup?
Yeah, I like the schedule. I had my article today come out in the Toronto Star, and I wrote that it might be a bit of a favor for the Leafs to go up against the Floridas and Tampa last night to remind them that these are the emotional teams that you know, sucked the life out of you the last few years. And so there's that element for sure. And I think we got it again last night. And, you know, for me, one of the major boxes that they seem to be checking off is there's a physicality involved in their game now that we necessarily didn't see in the past. And at times they were searching for, and a term that we've used the last few years for the Leafs is the lack of killer instinct. And being able to, like, physically and mentally, you know, emotionally stay in check here. And I don't think that's going to be a problem this year. And, you know, whether it's, you know, Ryan Reeves last night or, you know, McCabe or Joel Edmondson when he comes back, there just seems to be an element that this team won't get pushed around like it has in the past. And last night wasn't about Tampa Bay pushing them around. A good solid 40 minutes earlier this week wasn't around the Florida Panthers pushing them around. So, you know, now you go into the rest of the regular season here. And to your point, just get ready here. Power play. You know, you're going to get Mitch Marner in all probability on the weekend here. He's a huge piece here moving forward. So get him back in the equation here. And he'll reset a few things. And you just hope by game one, April 20th, that you're ready to go.
Yeah, you mentioned the physicality there, Kipper, and obviously Reeves is the first guy everybody's going to think of, especially with him playing the way he's playing right now. But are you surprised how quickly Treliving has been able to kind of imprint that on this roster. I mean, we all know Kyle Dubas' philosophy in terms of building a team. We also saw the kind of changes he made in that towards the tail end, going out and getting your O'Reillys and Acharis, but it never felt like that you know, personality was ever able to wholly take hold. Maybe it's the fact that you got two guys that have more import in Domi and Bertuzzi, and they've been here all year long, that's causing more of that kind of buy-in, but I've been surprised at how quickly Treliving has been able to imprint that part of his team building philosophy on this team, because Lord knows they've tried in the past to graft a little toughness and fight onto this Leafs group, but it hasn't always taken.
Well, last year, led by the Ryan O'Reilly trade, that's major surgery at the trade deadline. Mm. And, you know, for whatever reason, I think lack of assets is the number one. They couldn't do that this year. So you go and you add a little bit, you tweak a little bit here, and you rely on the core that you've had all season long. And that was the game plan, whether it was designed by or not by Treliving. That's what's happened. But there was a focus on physicality and bringing in guys like Labushkin, Edmondson. You know, Connor Dewar is fit right into that bottom six, mm-hmm. you know, through penalty killing or a good hard forecheck with Camp and Reeves now. And they seem to be rather set here moving forward. But, you know, it's really going to come down to your star players. And last night, you know, unfortunately, Braden Point and Kucherov had the best of Tavares and Willie Nylander. And, you know, Hedman was real good last night and looked like one of the best defensemen in the world. And Morgan Riley's going to have to come back and bring his game by game one up to the challenge that he had last season, where he looked and skated, you know, fabulous. So that's, again, we're down to the half a dozen games where these guys are going to tweak here. But that to me is an easier fix than trying to light a fire under these guys like in previous seasons. So I'm a big fan of what I can see in terms of intensity and emotion and the physicalities moving forward. They look like they can play a seven-game series now, and if they can't win it, they're gonna take some skin off of the other team. Mm. They're gonna leave them with some bumps and bruises along the way, and you know, that's the way it should be in a Stanley Cup playoff series.
Austin Matthews with goal number 63 yesterday, seven games to go. This was the pregame quote from Sheldon Keefe in regards to Austin Matthews' chase of 70. I talked to Austin. That's not the focus for him. He wants to finish the season strong. He wants to be feeling good. He wants to have energy through the last stretch and going into the playoffs, and that's really the goal for our team, to have our game in order and to be as healthy and rested as possible as we finish this last push, which I, like, yeah. Obviously, the playoffs are the thing that matters most for both Sheldon Keefe and Austin Matthews and Maple Leafs as a whole. But when you come out and say that, it feels like you indicate, like, if he's at 68, 69 goals in game 81 or 82, and the plan previously might have been to rest him, that, yeah, you're going to keep resting him, even if he's, like, really, really close, right there. How do you imagine them playing that out? Like, is that going to happen?
Yes, it should. It should. Stop him. Rest him. Like, come on. Like, the obsession for this guy to hit 70, and I get it. It doesn't happen very often. It's a big number. I get all of that. But I also get no Stanley Cup since 1967. What are we doing here? So, you know, Sheldon needs to stick to his guns that nobody wants to see 70 goals and then the Leafs go quietly in the first round. Like, of course it can be both. It's a great point. Yes.
You know what, Kipper? I disagree. I've been on this planet not super long, but long enough to know that both of those good things happening to the Toronto Maple Leafs in one year, no chance. So actually, no, it can't be both.
Well, then pick one that involves everybody, not one guy. So I'm good with Sheldon's comments. And I just hope he believes that, because again, the focus needs to be checking off a lot of boxes here still to go. And And I don't even see one box that checks get number 34, 70 goals. Now, last night, a great goal, power play. It's a set play. He's got the shot there. Like, if he can put together a string of goals between now and the end of the season that falls into the realm of the team concept, and, you know, it's including everybody. It's not everybody just sitting back and watching Austin go from end to end on his own. If the agenda includes 70 goals with the team playing, you know, a great playoff type of style concept, then go for it. But if it includes you just trying to shoot everything in sight and, you know, get me the puck, that's a disaster for the Leafs to finish the season with. So it is possible, but it's also possible that the 20 guys can be involved in this journey, and it's not looking like one guy, you know, making sure it's me first. That's the best way I can describe the last few games here to go.
Yeah, it's like, obviously, if Sheldon Keefe had his druthers, it's like, yeah, go score two a night and get this thing home and cleared with, where it's not a question for me. The worst case scenario is him sitting on 68 goals with two to play, where it is a real question, and it's seen as Keefe taking it away from him. And man, this team has sat Mitch Marner in last games of seasons, or second to last game of seasons, when he's been right there on the precipice of 100 points. So they have kind of set the precedent of that as well. I think there's an element to that. With Marner specifically, what do you expect to see from him? Let's presume he's back on Saturday in Montreal. Maybe it goes to Monday against Pittsburgh. But where do you expect to see him? Is it right back alongside Austin Matthews? And how much does it help the Leafs that he's kind of not to say that the team's sleepwalking through this portion of it, but there's an element of kind of biding their time until the playoffs. How big of a shot in the arm will it just be to the team to all of a sudden have 16 in the lineup after missing him for, what's it been, 3-4 weeks now?
Yeah, I consider him a top 10 player in the world. It's huge. And, you know, right away, I think he has to go back with Austin. Now, I'd like to see Max stay there with him. I don't know whether or not that's a long-term look going into the playoffs and how long they can keep together, but I think Max Domi has earned his position to play with Austin, and I don't want to necessarily see that duo broken up. What does that mean moving forward here? I think there's still some challenges for Sheldon to find the total right mix for John Tavares. I don't know where John is. I haven't liked his game, you know, this week. Is he locked in with Willie Nylander?
Would you, Kipper, I know you said right away put Mitch back with Austin, and nobody sits here saying that's a bad idea. But if you are worried about John Tavares and where his game is at, generally speaking, putting Mitch Marner next to him has not been a bad idea. Would you consider just doing that when Marner returns?
Listen, you got a lot of games here to kind of mix and match here once you get Mitch involved. So, you know, I don't know where John Tavares sits right now on the depth chart when it comes to game one. When his legs are there, when there seems to be some jump, there's no question that you like him right behind Austin, but it's been hit and miss lately with him. So can you experiment moving forward here on a second line? And, you know, there's some thoughts that maybe with the likes of McMahon and Holmberg and Robertson now looking a lot stronger, a lot more consistent here, maybe there's a chance to mix and match here your second and third lines here. So this is Sheldon's one of the major boxes that he still needs to check here moving forward, is what things are going to look like behind Austin Matthews' line.
So two Devils games remaining for the Maple Leafs, and those might be actually irrelevant by the time they happen, as the Devils lose in regulation to the Rangers and are 6 points back of the Capitals for that second wildcard spot in the Eastern Conference. That was besides the point, though, because there's a line brawl right off the opening draw, which was awesome. Like, I just put the cards on the table. I think the three of us probably very much found enjoyment and entertainment value in that. But, you know, it's one of those things very derisive or divisive on Twitter, right? Like, and it was one of those rare hockey moments where it does break through to not just hockey circles, but people talking about sports for a living. Even people outside of sports are like, wow, that's a thing. Is it good for the sport when that type of stuff does break through? Like when it's a line brawl and not necessarily Connor McDavid going through five guys.
You're asking a 57-year-old who's got 1,200 career penalty minutes if that's a good thing or not.
Well, Kipper,
I'm not sure I'm the right guy to answer that.
Well, no, you are, because the 34-year-old was zero career PIMS, at least in the NHL or any level that anyone would care about. He agrees with you. So just say how good it was.
I can only tell you that as someone that's kind of lived through something like that, there's a lot of different ways that you can bring a team together, but I can't think of a bigger one than that. From the Rangers to the Devils to the feel that you're sticking together, that you're one for all and all for one. That's the game of hockey when it matters most, is that you look across the room and you trust the guy beside you to watch your back or look after you. And it's a fantastic feeling. Now, is there people out there that'll argue there's different ways to get there? Sure. Go ahead. But this is my world that, that I've lived. And, you know, apparently it's waned. They've cleaned up the game so much. And that's what, again, I don't think people realize, is that, you know, in my era, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 games out of 10, there'd be a fight. And now we got 2 or 3 games out of 10, 7 games every week out of 10, no fighting, you know, nothing like this. So it happened. There's a lot of bad blood between these two teams, as we know, with a couple of heavyweights on it. So I think it was fairly predictable something was going to happen. Could we have predicted a line brawl right off the start? No. But there's not too many people that, you know, didn't get a charge out of it one way or the other. So, again, for the Rangers, who's trying to get ready to win a Stanley Cup, considered now one of the top teams in the league, they still got a lot to prove that they can come together as a team, and that's what they wanted to do last night, challenging the Devils, and it is what it is. But there's not too many people walking in the New York Ranger dressing room, players or the Devils, not feeling good about what they did last night.
Yeah, my two favorite parts of it were just the overhead. I don't know if you've managed to see this, but somebody took a video from the press box where you really get, it's like I'm watching a football game with like the advanced, like all 32 film. I could see everybody kind of squaring off. And the other part that I thoroughly loved about this was Laviolette, who answered the challenge put forth by Travis Green of putting all those mutants on the ice, then screaming at Travis Green about Lord knows what. I just, when it gets hot, everybody gets involved, and I don't think Laviolette had a point he was making. He was just angry, and I kind of love that part of it, even, Kipper.
Hey, listen, maybe it's running a little bit of a circle here, but, you know, between that last night and Ryan Reeves, like, you can't tell me that emotional element doesn't ring through a building. So, you know, it's not like people are going to race out to get a Ryan Reeves or a Matt Rempe or a McDermott, like New Jersey. There's not that many out there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't think that we're going back to anything. But you know, that part of the game can exist still in certain ways and certain, you know, elements of an 82 game season. We saw it last night. Might be, another few years before we see something like that again. The bottom line is, you know, we're going to see some great hockey coming up in the, in the Stanley Cup playoffs, led by Connor McDavid and the Austin Matthews and the Nate McKinnons. And, you know, this will be a nice, hey, remember that game conversation when you're having a beer with your buddies. That's all.
Yeah. Right. It's the spice of life. And I like that we can have, can we have all the things? Yeah. We can have a game that has a Pier 6 brawl, and then we can have nice little silky little plays through the neutral zone. Great goals.
Just you said that, Kipper, and I'm so excited for it to be warm enough for me to sit on a patio with buddies having a couple cervezas talking about that exact moment. Yeah. So I'm just like, I'm already dying for that to happen now.
Yeah.
It's coming. It's coming.
Next week, maybe. Kipper, thanks, buddy.
Okay, you guys have a great day.
You too. Nick Kiprios, Real Kipper and Born. Yeah, and like these conversations are tough because I'm aligned with you and Nick Kiprios in fighting. And like I defer obviously to Nick Kiprios in all things fighting in the NHL and understanding the risks that are involved and yada, yada, yada. Okay. That's awesome. And it would be less awesome if it happened routinely and regularly. And the idea that, oh, it's such a bad look for hockey when it's like people open up their Twitter screen and it's that, and that's the only thing they see. Here's the thing. Those people are not tuning into hockey games either way. That's not your target audience. No. And what I think hockey has made a massive mistake in recent days, or not recent days, recent years.
I was like, did I miss them?
No. In recent years is like ignoring the true hockey fans.
Yeah.
And not even the true hockey fans, even like the fringe hockey fans. Guess what they're interested in?
Face punching.
Also that.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah. And despite somebody on a panel tisking you enjoying it, we're all allowed to enjoy every minute of that. I think it matters so much that it's happening there as well. It can't be lost on the fact that it's like, and boy, fitting with the guy we just talked to, but the last title team for the Rangers was coached by Iron Mike Keenan with Nick Kiprios a part of it. That is, you know, I talk a lot about fake hockey markets and real and whatever. That's a real hockey market. And I don't know, if I'm just thinking, if I'm spitballing in the NHL, like if I'm in the head offices of get people going, I don't know. What about a rivalry between two teams in the tri-state area with all the eyeballs on them, and one of them is seen as big bullies and the other one is the young upstarts with tons of skill? Like, if only somebody could market such a thing. It could not be set up more perfectly to market it. They're rivals just by geography alone.
Yeah.
They actually hate one another.
Yeah.
The fact that Rempe somehow has spaced out all his fights perfectly to never totally leave the consciousness, but also never, you know, pardon the pun, beating us over the head with his presence in the league. It's all been perfect. So, yeah, not everybody has to like it. If you're somebody that offends your sensibilities, okay.
That's fine.
That's fine.
And maybe like that's enough. It doesn't happen often. Like you can have, if you're not into it, it's not that big a part of the game.
No, it almost never happens, which is why we're talking about it. If this was a thing that happened five times a year, we wouldn't be, I'm sure your phone was going through the exact same thing. It just text blowing up everywhere. Did you see this? It was almost like the old school, like, oh, this guy's scoring 50 in the NBA, except people do that every day. Malachi Flynn did it last night, so it's no longer even special. But it got people going. It's pretty rare.
The people going.
Well, honestly, though, it's pretty rare for, I mean, even McDavid. Like, McDavid will have 2-2 seemingly twice a week, and that doesn't break through. Just another thing that happens. That broke through.
Here's how I know it's good for the game.
Oh.
The Knicks are battling for their spot outside of the play-in tournament.
I thought you were talking about the Knicks Kiprios.
The Yankees are off to an incredible start. Had an extra innings win yesterday. Very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
You know what the front page of the New York Post sports section is?
I'm guessing the way you're setting this up, I know.
Fight night. Rangers make points with their fists and their play in win over rivals. It's the sports newspaper of record in New York City. Just sports, though. I don't know if you want to delve into the rest of that newspaper, but
I have some thoughts. We'll save that for another time.
That was the biggest deal in the biggest, not just sports market, I mean, media market in the world. That broke through, and sorry, like, Adam Fox with like a 5-goal game isn't necessarily doing that, but
I will go as far as to say not doing that. Like Adam Fox could have 5 goals tomorrow night. I don't even know when the Rangers play next. Yeah. Probably tomorrow or Saturday. It would not break through in the way. You know how I know that? Because Nathan MacKinnon scored 4 goals this year, and it was like, okay, Nathan MacKinnon scored 4 goals. And I don't know, maybe we're all colored differently by this because we saw Austin Matthews do that in his first game, so 4 goals, what is that even? Uh-huh. But I actually don't think it would break through in the same way. You'd have to, I genuinely think you would have to see a, like, Sittler night from somebody to have it break, Because what would just a hockey player doing hockey things have to do to break through in that way? Like, if the Breadman had if Adam Fox had a 5-goal game in that game last night against the Devils, snuffing out their playoff hopes, it's buried behind the Knicks and the Yankees.
Yep.
It just is in that paper. So, that's a very good point. I'm sorry I cut you off, but I did think you meant like the Knicks of the world, meaning Nick Kiprios.
The Knickerbockers. All right. When we come back, speaking of basketball, we will touch on what is going on with the Raptors, because you may have missed it. I hope for your sake you did. Yeah, I think for the first time this season, I didn't even flip over to the Raptors game for even 1 second. Mm-hmm. They played a guy that was cut from his G League team yesterday. And Malachi Flynn going off. Also, the Liv boys maybe getting antsy.
God, these guys. That's the worst.
Also, Stephon Diggs traded out of Buffalo. We'll try and figure out exactly why he was so discontented in Buffalo. Anyways, that and more next. The Fan Morning Show continues. Ben and Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Dive deep into Toronto sports and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. Those the inspiring words of one Darko Rajakovic.
He's trying his best, okay? I don't know what you want him to say.
I mean, got to be on the short list of the toughest seasons to start your NBA head coaching career.
But also not, because there's literally nothing that could possibly be asked of him.
Yeah.
Like, it's not easy. I'm not sitting here saying that.
No one's faulting him is what you mean. It's like you are completely like Teflon from criticism, rightly so.
Could have lost that game by 100 points, and what was he supposed to do it?
Pretty close.
I know. They are trying.
It's complete crap.
Yeah.
I mean, agreed. Good job, Santos. Why don't we use that more? I didn't know we had that just in the hopper.
Like, how to play the game.
Where have these been coming from?
Not that way. But, I mean,
no,
it's literally like fantasy camp, because they got guys that are barely G League players that are playing in the NBA right now, and they're looking around and just like, whoa.
This is what it's like, eh? Cool. Living our dream.
Oh, 48-point loss. By the way, franchise record margin of defeat to the Minnesota Timberwolves. 15th straight loss. So here's the thing.
It's like Austin Matthews goal records now. It's like every loss is a new franchise record for the most disappointing.
Yeah, they've already suffered the biggest home loss. Like, I think it was like three of the top seven worst losses in franchise history have happened over the last couple of weeks. And again, like, so the Raptors have played 30 different players this season, which is a franchise record. It's most in the NBA. It's one off the all-time record in NBA history. You just need one more player. Like, if you're going to be bad,
you have to almost
it's incumbent on you to set a record.
Should be like they should have an open tryout for the Toronto man that gets to be the guy who sets the record.
Honestly, yeah, who would fault him? Like, when we're talking about G League bench players, how far off are we from like, the guy who had a good college career who just like goes to plays in a run?
Well, and I know this isn't fair. Like, you know, these guys are busy with their own lives and stuff, but like, can we not just get the Scrub Brothers out here? Like, if we're going to do with this, honestly.
Yeah. Anyways, they're also losers of 15 consecutive, which is two off the franchise mark of 17 straight. It's the season from hell.
I haven't won a game in a month, Ben.
Nothing matters, right? Because the players aren't playing, although Emmanuel Quickley is back. RJ Barrett was back for a game, although not back yesterday. Grady Dick's been playing through all this. I don't know. Is there like some like
no
effect of no. I, him being near this? It's just it's such a bizarre scenario, and it's such a bizarre upcoming couple of months for this team too, who might or might not control their own first round pick and.
Yeah.
What you should be rooting for in that regard is a confusing one, too. I can't remember a sports season like what we've seen in Toronto. And, a guy that you traded away who I don't think is, like, now becoming the second coming. He's playing. Someone's got to score, I guess, in Detroit for a Pistons team that's just as bad. Malachi Flynn, 50 points off the bench for the Pistons yesterday. It's just, you got a guy who's away from the team because he's involved in a betting scandal on himself. Like, it's just, it's insane. It is, it's a season unlike any I've ever experienced in my near 40 years of watching pro sports.
Yeah, I like this tweet as well from last night. The Leafs beat the Wolves by 3 on opening night. 161 days later, the Wolves 52 wins, the Raptors 52 losses. That's the funniest part about this as well, is how the season started with a win against the Timberwolves. And, you know, I know they weren't at their full, I forget who was missing, but there were guys missing from that game. Maybe it was Towns, maybe it was Gobert. I don't know. It doesn't really matter. Timberwolves should have beat them if they were missing everybody. If they were down to their worst 8 guys, they probably still should have beat this Raptors team. You mentioned the Grady Dick. I don't think he is negatively affected by this because he's actually able to play through it, but I'd be lying if I wasn't worried about what this does to Scotty Barnes. I know I'd probably have the exact opposite take if he wasn't away from the team, or if he wasn't with the team. I go, this is bad. He's not showing buy-in, but just him being so comfortable. And look, I don't want him sitting there sulking, punching stuff, breaking his other hand. I don't need performative outrage, but a young player getting so used to this just being the way it goes, I don't know if anyone's getting used to it.
He's played in a playoff series for the Raptors.
I don't think that this is some moral failing of Scotty Barnes. I just think that that Pistons team that we've referenced is kind of a good example. They got no expectations at all, but they still find a way to scratch and claw and try to have decent habits. And yeah, the guys who were supposed to be bad on the team are actually playing as opposed to hurt like the Raptors have had. But I am a little concerned about what it does to Scotty Barnes. I don't think this like affects his ceiling as an NBA player, but I do think it can affect the mentality aspect of it. And I think if we have any questions about Barnes, there's some element of that as well. Like, he can be a little sleepy throughout games at times. And I just think that this being around this just allows that side of him to kind of grow a little more.
I just generally think nothing matters here. Like, it's just such a unique circumstance. You are playing absolute nobodies.
Yes.
No offense to the human beings that are occupying those uniforms. Those are not NBA players. Mm-hmm. It's just a weirdo, bizarro season where the Raptors get to skate by criticism. I don't think the front office gets to skate by. Now, we're not that far removed from 2019, and the championship does paper over everything. But I can't think of a season like what we've seen for the Raptors.
Can I give you one more reason why it's been just a Raptors cycle of hell right now? And I don't know, people feel differently about this, but because Vince, I always screw this up. It's like, he's not technically in the Hall of Fame. He's been like named to it. He will be inducted, whatever it is. We now have to go through the cycle again of, why can't you just forgive and forget? You leave Vince alone. He was young. He didn't know. We've just done this a million times, and like, I don't need to relitigate or have this conversation again, but every time Vince Carter's name enters the news, it just leads to a sea of people rising up to tut-tut anyone who dare remember how his tenure ended here and what he did to the franchise in terms of torturing them after he left. So that's the other part of this, just in terms of twisting the knife and things being bad in Raptors land right now. Can't stand it.
Yeah. No, it's not going to get better. Unless you think that that's going to be a happy moment for Raptors fans, which...
The other thing on it as well is that, and yeah, there will be people, but all those people are like 9, and we're like, I saw the highlights. Remember when he dunked over Vice? It was great. The other thing about this from the Raptors perspective as well is just it... There's, again, much like with the other teams we talked about, there's just no silver lining. Like, there's nothing you can tease or take out of this. It's like, even RJ Barrett has had the family tragedy. It has just all been truly atrocious.
Yeah, when RJ Barrett's played, he's been really good.
Yeah,
when
no,
quickly
I don't
he's
say
played,
that
he's
to,
been okay.
Yeah,
but
don't say that as a knock on either.
And like Grady Dick, you know, he couldn't hit a 3 to save his life. And yesterday, was the same deal, apparently. I didn't see 1 second of this basketball game. But, he was 1 of 6 from 3. He's been at least a little more capable shooting 3. He was 6 of 17 from the field, which isn't ideal, minus 37. But yeah,
hard to be plus.
Let's stop talking about the Raptors, shall we?
Agreed.
Buffalo Bills making a massive move yesterday, trading away their number one wide receiver, Stephon Diggs, traded to Houston for a 2025 second-round pick, which is the Vikings' second-round pick. They also send a 2024 sixth-rounder and a 2025 fifth-rounder to Houston along with Diggs. There's a huge dead cap hit for the Bills this season, but they're off his money for next year.
Yep.
This is obviously, I mean, you do get a second-round pick, so it's not entirely addition by subtraction, but the deal here is essentially addition by subtraction, which is really strange because this is a player, okay, the performance dropped off and the relationship between he and the quarterback is strange at times, didn't show up for a mandatory mini camp thing before the season with what we thought was an unexcused absence, and then afterwards it was excused, and just like weird tweets. Like, I don't necessarily know what went wrong between the player and the franchise, other than it just seems like this is what's going to happen with him wherever he goes.
Yeah, I think there's an element that it never clicked. It obviously clicked in terms of on field. They had tremendous chemistry. They had great years together in terms of success, but there was always this angst surrounding the player. And, you know, part of this is diva wide receiver. Like, it's a tradition as old as time, but this always seemed to be a little more than just your kind of typical wide receiver one complaining that he doesn't get the ball enough. The missing workout stuff, that's whatever. Guys miss workouts all the time in the NFL. I really think that this is the Bills understanding that this was the time that, I mean, they had a lot of, you know, we don't need to relitigate it all, but it's like they had a massive sea change on their defense of all the guys they let go there. I think there was some element of, all right, the franchise isn't changing because Josh Allen's here and that's not going to change at all. But if there is going to be a sea change where you're really shaking up the room, Diggs is not going to be back after next year. You might as well do it at this point in time. And the other thing, and, you know, hey, you got to go draft the guy to make this idea come to fruition, but you hear it all the time, and this isn't just a this year's draft thing. This has been the last couple of years. Just easier to find receivers. You feel like you can find guys that can not replicate who Stephon Diggs is. That's you know, a special, special animal. But you can get a couple of different guys. You find them late in drafts. I think there's an element of that. But I think it's mostly you had the sea change on personality, on the defense. Might as well have the clean break with them here.
Yeah, just really strange. Like, led the NFL in receptions and yards receiving his first year with the Bills. Like, we obviously know the quarterback is good enough. It's not like he's looking, it's like, hey, I'm open, get me the ball. Quarterback can throw it 200 yards. Yeah, and the numbers did drop off. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the relationship stuff, I would
it
love
just
to know.
It has never not been weird.
Yeah, I would love to know why exactly that is. Very strange. Masters Week is next week. Okay.
Sorry.
So the Live guys will be back on our radar.
Taylor Gooch.
Yeah, the guys that are qualified to play in the Masters. Man, poor Mackenzie Hughes coming up just shy of qualifying.
Tough.
Yep. But there'll be plenty of Canadian content. So Live boys asking about this proposed, agreed upon in principle merger between the PIF and the PGA Tour. And the deadline that's been extended and the conversations that are still taking place between those two sides. Hey, Phil Mickelson talked about, hey, we understood the first couple of years of this thing when you try and act change, it's going to be a little messy. Bryson DeChambeau more explicitly touched on, I think, the overwhelming sentiment throughout the Live Tour is, it needs to happen fast. It's not a two-year thing. Like, it needs to happen quicker rather than later. Just for the good of the sport, too many people are losing interest. Oh, too many people.
Mm.
It sounds to me like one person is losing interest, and that would be Bryson DeChambeau, who, he's eating delicious filet mignon on the daily, but yeah, going to Trump Doral wearing your shorts and nobody caring what happened there, like, it probably gets old.
Yeah, I think there's an element to that from him, and you touched on it. This is a guy who he didn't like it when they were yelling Brooksy at him and everybody was getting on his case and, you know, they were bullying him and the PGA Tour had to come to his defense. But he certainly liked that better than no one caring at all. This is a guy who loves the spotlight. He needs it. He cut like a 5-minute video montage of himself, like, you know, cooking eggs and eating bacon and working out. And it's just, he needs the attention. He needs the eyeballs on him. I also don't think if you just did a draft of all the Liv guys that you could have come up with a worse person for this message.
Yeah.
Maybe Phil, because he seemed as like nakedly greedy. I suppose Patrick Reed, just in terms of, you know, general hatred from the golf community. But there's no worse messenger for this than Bryson. And I know this will shock everyone coming from me. I couldn't have less sympathy for a guy. You took a sledgehammer to the world of golf because you needed your big payday and you need your guaranteed money. And okay, like, I'm not going to say I don't begrudge you, because boy, do I. I also have no sympathy for you for laying in this bed of your own making and no one else's.
Yeah, what's he talking about with the like lack of interest in the sport? I mean, is there a number to back that up?
Because no, there's not, because golf does amazing TV ratings. Yeah. But I will say, I do think, and part of this is not just on Liv. I mean, the reason it happened is because of Liv, but with the new elevated events, it really does, even for me, like even for a sicko who loves it all, even for me, it does take away from the weeks that aren't an elevated event. And
sure,
this week coming up always feels like nothing because it's the tune-up week for the Masters. But I really do think there is some element of that. And hey, the Masters is going to be next week and golf will feel as good as it's ever felt.
Yeah.
But 2 weeks after that, when they're, I don't know, again, I don't know where, kind of telling.
I mean, but here's my thing, though. It's like, golf isn't going to go away. It's not like, oh man, it's on life support. It's not like the National Lacrosse League, which had like a moment and then it's like, we shut down because of a labor situation, and it never quite got, like, NLL was on NBC for a hot second, right? It's not like that. It's not like, oh, hey man, we don't get our stuff together, we're gone forever. Like Carton IndyCar, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like that used to be a lot more elevated.
Bring
before
back
they
Paul
separated.
Tracy, sponsored by Player Cigarettes.
And then eventually came back. It's golf. Like, we're still going to have events like the Players.
Yeah.
And those will still exist. Again, this feels like a guy who's like, I'm disappearing from public consciousness. Nobody knows who I am anymore. And to me, if I'm the PGA Tour and I start hearing more and more conversations like that, and now that I have the like pillow of the $3 billion dollars that all the richest sports owners in the world have funneled towards my tour, I'm in the driver's seat when it comes to this negotiation. It's not a surprise to me that this is taking as long as it's taken. So the PGA doesn't, like, they, I guess, would like those guys back, but they're not in a position where they're desperate to make this work, especially when you start to, like, this is, the PIF has to be telling these guys to shut up.
Yeah. How many of those guys does the PGA Tour want? I mean, they take them all back, but they want five of those guys back. Yeah. Like, they want Koepka, they want Rahm, they want Bryson. Like, he's still a draw in that regard. I go back to it. I have no sympathy for anyone in this. I do think there's just an element where he's not right, but I do think there is a waning interest. Hockey, I'm not going to pretend I was there for it, but I guarantee you it wasn't in a better place when the WHL and WHA and NHL were rival leagues, because guess what? There was less talent at the bottom end of those leagues because they should have been just one. And that's not to say I have a problem when I see, just to pick a random golfer, Eric Cole win a golf tournament. I don't get bothered by that. It's golf. That would have happened if you had a full field event with all the best guys. But I can't sit here and say golf's in a better place. And lastly on this, it's why they should have, and by they, this isn't the PGA Tour, this is really two bodies. It's the RNA, who do the Open Championship, and the Masters Committee. They had a chance to snuff Liv out by right away saying, you take that money, you're never playing in this tournament again. They could have done it. They would have snuffed it out instantly, but they didn't want to take that stance. And now they have to be held accountable partially for where we're at with the game of golf as well.
Yeah, can't wait to watch the Masters.
Oh, my God. Oh, by the way, just a golf show preview pod. We'll be taping it next Monday.
Nice. All right, time now for the Wake and Rake, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sports book. 19 plus, bet responsibly. Gotta be a first time for this particular wager. Will the Toronto Blue Jays be no hit in another game in the 2024 regular season, paying minus money, Brent? Minus 110 if you think the Jays, in the remaining 155 games, have one more no-hitter in them. Now, through seven games, they've been no-hit. They've also been one hit. They're also dead last in Major League Baseball in batting average. Guys at the top of the lineup, like, going to hit better. Guys at the bottom of the lineup, your guess is as good as mine. It's hard to give up some juice on a bet like this, but Yeah, it does kind of feel right.
There's certainly some value there. I will just say, either side of it, that's the least fun bet of all time to be involved in. I just have to be
honest.
You
think?
You're rooting for a no-hitter for your team if you're taking it, and if not, it's, I suppose if you take the other side of it, you just get to celebrate like you won the World Series every time they get a knock.
Yeah.
Not every hit, just the first knock, because really, what's it matter once there's a second one? That is interesting. I would go, I'd say they're not going to be no-hit again is where I lean on that.
I think they get no hit. All right, on Sportsnet tonight, huge matchup in the Metro. Penguins trying to keep rolling in Washington to play the Capitals at 7 o'clock on Sportsnet. The Penguins are, you know what? This is a coin flip. Both teams minus 110 on the money line. The total is 6, Brent.
I'm going to go Penguins on the money line. Caps fighting it right now. They're in a dogfight for this playoff spot. Penguins on life support. I also don't hate the Crosby and Russ each to score, Penguins to win. You get that at plus 710.
Yeah. If you like the call the Caps parlay, paying plus 680, Ovechkin to score, plus the Capitals to score over 4.5 goals and a Capitals win. Although I don't like that. I think the Penguins have that magic. I think the Penguins might actually make it.
Oh, let it happen.
All
please.
Right. That was the Wake and Rake presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sports book, 19+. Bet responsibly. When we come back, I'm going to yell at Ben Nicholson-Smith, and he's not going to deserve it, but I mean, he's going to have to.
Well, I've been eating it for 2 hours, so I'm happy somebody else has finally showed up.
So
you wouldn't dare yell at Kipper. So
yeah. Hopefully he's not listening and doesn't know I'm about to yell at him. But that's coming up next. Fan Morning Show continues. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.